listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast. From marriage to menopause and margaritas, nothing is off the table. This is Cindy Goldenberg.
You know, years ago, when I got my dress, and I remember I had to pay extra to get the wedding dress finished because I'm tall, and I think I needed a rush because even though we were together 4 years, the boat that we wanted to get married on in Marina Del Rey in Los Angeles had a cancellation, and they called us and they said, you can get married on this date. And I said, okay. So we never really had a proposal, but we had already lived together 4 years. So, and we'd talked about marriage and we already felt married, but we had a wedding. And it was nice, and friends and family. And I remember saying something like, I hereby take you, darling, my wonderful, loving husband, the man of my dreams, my soulmate, my blah. Oh, I promise to take you in sickness and in health till death do us part, blah, 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 blah. Yep, but what I should have added was, but I'm not going to buy into your family's bullshit, the control they have over you, all the brainwashing they've done that you clearly in the decades in the future will never see what I see and how it has affected us and all their opinions and judgment and their little tiny minute minds of drama and passive aggressive weird fucked up shit. I'm not going to buy into it. And neither are you. Well, that's faith-filled talking. And if I could go back in time, I want my money back. And I mean, I'm glad I'm married, but I'm telling you, I get it. I remember one couple, they're like friends of the family. They were my mom and dad's friends, and they became my friends as I got older because they were younger than my parents, but older than me, kind of like uncles and aunt kind of thing. And I remember him saying to me, he says, a successful marriage, ours is successful because we both come from another country and our in-laws and families are far, far away. And when I met my husband, I said, because none of his family came to our wedding. And he said, when I met him, he says, if my family, they're all back east, if they lived any closer, we'd move to Singapore. And I thought, okay. But, you know, I just figured I come from a cast of characters. Like, what the fuck? You know, everybody's got that alcoholic parent or gun-toting Republican uncle or whatever. Everybody's got something that's a something. And I had a grandmother, and I love my mother. She was so beautiful. But her mom, she was raised in Hollywood, and my grandmother was a very hardworking woman that had a business and a dry cleaners. But she was, you know, what you'd call now like an opioid addict, drug addict, uppers, bennies, greenies, oranges, reds, yellows, whatever. I just remember she had lots of handbags with pills in them, and they all had all kinds of bright Crayola colors. And she had a lot of energy because she'd talk really fast, and she'd want to go shopping and buy shoes and Easter and matching this and matching that. And then she'd get really tired and then go to bed and get up and go to work. And that's all she wanted to do is go to work and marry men that were alcoholics and carried guns. So needless to say, my mother was raised by a narcissist maniac that didn't know what time of day it was. But as she explains to me, her mother, her grandmother really raised her and gave her the worth. But anyway, back to my point is that growing up and being in a relationship and knowing that your own cousins and your cousins' cousins and your kids or whatever family and your siblings, it's give and take and it is what it is. And nobody had it like on TV. Nobody had like perfection. And even if they didn't intentionally abuse you or hurt you. They did inadvertently. And I hate to think that I did anything but pure perfection to my kids. I unfortunately am reminded of many things that I did wrong. So I didn't mean to, but I thought, well, I'm not as bad as what I grew up in. And my parents, I can forgive them because I look at where they come from and think, holy fuck, who could live through that? Then I meet and marry my husband and discover his family and go, well, oh my God, who could live through that and where they come from and no wonder and this and that. And then, you know, and then you let a lot of it, you roll with it, you're young, you have a career, you have kids, you do things. And then the patterns start and they get deeper and deeper and deeper and repetitive and concrete and predictable. And you are looking at someone that you were crazy about that now decades later you're looking and they left the building. I don't know where they left, but you're stuck with a version of their parents. And it's frightening and haunting. And you go, this isn't freaking happening. What happened to my mate? What happened to my partner? Now, I've worked on myself, and why not you work on yourself? Because you don't know how, because you don't get to have worth. You don't get to have these things because you're so fucking brainwashed. I don't even know what goes on in that brain. And then I calm down and I realize and I put everything into perspective and I go, this is as old as mankind. I'm sure the cavemen had this. And then I smile when I watch the news or I watch the Today Show or I watch something uplifting on pop culture and I see Prince Harry and Meghan Markle making their exit, bowing out, saying, we are not going to be part of the royal family. And that was, you know, a while ago. And I thought, okay, but now they're like, we got things to do. We're going to the Americas. We're going to Canada. We're doing this and we're doing that. And everybody's having a conniption. And I go, oh my God, congratulations. Go be free. Go fly like the eagles. Get the fuck out of town. Go away. Be far away from all the in-laws. And you too can be happy. So as I look at this couple, and I remember when I met my husband, I was in 1981. I forget how old I was, in my 20s. And I was in law school. And during the summer in Los Angeles, I worked at a restaurant that isn't there now, but it was in a part of LA called Restaurant Row, where there were all these, like a steakhouse and then a lobster house and then a this place and a that place, you know, like different nice elegant restaurants one after another. And I was a hostess, and I wasn't very good. I mean, I was good. I could, you know, seat people, but sometimes when they go, the waiters, they go, could you just, they had house wines like black or red, I mean, or white wine, and in the, see what I mean? Like in the basket, just go bring them a glass of wine. I remember taking a wine glass, and they always say, now put your thumb down on the stem, and I would drop it. So there's no way I could be a waiter or a cocktail waitress, or I'm just too clumsy as much as I think I'm whatever. But back in the day when we were first together, I remember when I got the job to be an extra in the film Sword and the Sorcerer. And it was like a B flick compared to Conan the Barbarian. But on that movie, and it was with Lee Horsley, who was in a TV show who became the Aaron Spelling star of Matt Houston. But he was in this movie, and there were extras, and it was kind of like Castle Days. So we filmed outside of Los Angeles in this Mission Inn hotel way out in Riverside, which is like an hour and a half out of LA, and it looked like a castle. So I was one of the like six, seven, eight, nine, depending on what day, how many girls showed up, like harem girl background. And I'd kind of walk around in a robe with my hair up in a net and barely any makeup on. But then our costume was like a kind of a raggedy looking I Dream a Genie, like these furry wigs. And we were girls that kind of took the meat and the platters up to the men. I don't know, because they were all, like soldiers and things like that. But anyway, it was a job, and I got like 150 a day, and that was a lot of money for me. And one person in the makeup room brought a little TV, and I would sit there in the chair and get the makeup and the body makeup, and I thought, oh, I wish I was at home for this week that I'm out here, because today is the royal wedding. And since we filmed at night, we stayed up all night, and then we go to bed in the mornings. And I remember seeing on the little TV that they had in the makeup room Princess Diana getting married to Prince Charles. And I thought, oh my God, she's so beautiful and young, a real fair maiden. And so even though I didn't get to see it really in color and on a big screen, I remember it, and I could close my eyes and tell you exactly when she came out of that carriage like Cinderella. Now fast forward. I have my I do. I did my I do's. I got married 5 years after that time, or 4 years after that time. Had my son, and now it's late 90s. I'm having my daughter. I'm pregnant with her, and my girlfriend in Laguna Beach had a beautiful brunch baby shower for me. And I remember her calling, a month or so before and telling me, let's pick the day. And I said, wow, you don't really have to do it. I mean, the first baby, it's a big deal, but I guess so. It took a while for me to get pregnant, and I finally did, and I was all excited. And then a few days before my shower, Princess Di got killed. So we had a nice brunch, and we talked, and she was British. And we were eating, but all of us, I think we said a little prayer, or we just kind of would talk and get teary-eyed and go, it's so hard to believe. It's so hard to believe. Because, we saw her go through her independence, and I thought, who needs this whole Camilla Parker Bowles in your back seat? And it's obvious you were this little fair maiden, and you were used, and blah, blah, blah. And then you made fun and had a good time when you had your kids, but you can't really see your kids like a regular mom, and you have all these rules, and you're friends with Fergie, and then thank God for that. So even though I wasn't really, quote, a royal watcher, it was part of pop culture. And then when she broke off and she became a divorced, dynamic, independent, walking the mine shaft, working with people with AIDS, touching them, philanthropist, humanitarian, goddess from heaven, this heavenly, angelic, powerful woman. Then it was like, oh my God, she's beautiful, she's striking, she's poised, she won, she did it her way. She's elegant. She's the best mother. She's so beautiful. She was revered. And then to have her life be taken so quickly, it was so sad. And so now I have my daughter, and we all know anybody, I don't know, my age or younger, remembers her. But there was no one like her and never will. And I remember her funeral and everything, and Elton John. But now to know and understand borderline depression, borderline personality disorder, and there's 260 something kind, and it's fear of abandonment, which sounds so clinical, But what it is the abandonment, if we can just kind of do this painting or this wash, the abandonment can be physical person is abandoned. Abandoned in that their emotions and their love is not, it's not there. So for the infant, it could be subconscious. I've read certain things and seen certain instances that people grow up and have depression and do self-infliction, or you can't explain the disorder, and they become either anorexic or suicidal thoughts and different things, but they have this impulsivity to sabotage a good thing. And for years, when I would do my readings or I would just counsel people, they would ask me, well, why did my husband leave me? And I was the best wife. And we were so what happened? What did I do? And of course, women always think that, not all, but mostly. But that, and I would remember thinking, well, it's kind of like attracts like, that's what I'd say, because I didn't really know the terminology of certain mental illness markers. And I would just say, well, if a person grows up and the parent hits them and says, well, I love you, or doesn't hit them, or they walk in the room and they don't look at them, or they don't acknowledge them, or they criticize them. What are you wearing? What are you doing? Who do you think you are? To make them feel less than. Well, that is a form of neglect. It's called childhood emotional neglect. You don't have to raise a hand, but if you walk in a room and a parent doesn't look at you, or you don't feel any worth, you are disconnected. You can grow up with borderline personality disorder where you don't have a sense of self. It is hard for you to love. You have like a subconscious post-traumatic stress disorder, and they call it complex post-trauma, where you don't even know why you're distressed. I mean, a regular post-trauma could be, you know, the soldier, the gunshots, they hear backfire of a car, and you associate that, and then they go into a different kind of anxiety. But when you don't know where it comes from, and you grow up bewildered, but you have this need to self-sabotage, be it you grow up and you have this loving wife and loving children, but something in you goes, you're not worth it. You're not worth it. I didn't love you. I didn't love you. And I can remember doing a reading and hearing, because when he was a little boy, his mother was an alcoholic and said, I wish you were never born. Or I would hear, when I would do somebody else, I'd hear, I hear that you were sexually abused by your father and you're coming in at night and you've never told your husband or your children or anything else, and you are having a hard time staying in your relationship because of your worth issues and on and on. I mean, I would always hear an angelic point of view, a story of compassion that was an explanation, but I didn't know until recently to put it to actual words and definitions of certain personality disorders that can cause depression. Is a big, big word. It's like saying blue. You know, there's many kinds of blue or whatever, blue sky, blue this. But I'm just trying to get a generic kind of outline. So be it as a child, you're neglected, you have childhood emotional neglect, or come here, and you're baited to believe, oh, well, you're a good boy, but your grades aren't good. And they don't say what the fuck, but their intention does. And they say, like, well, you're not applying yourself. Mm-mm-mm-mm. That person grows up kind of like, well, what? They don't walk in a room. They don't grow up happy. They grow up reactive. Now another parent's an alcoholic. Well, that's an easy one. Or they're abusive, or somebody, you know, they carry a gun, they shoot the ceiling, or they beat the wife, or the, you know, that's my story. And there's the other ones that are really, but what about the ones that aren't overt, that are real quiet, that are real conditional, that are real background stories of the parent going, well, this is how we do things. And then if we all do this, we all look rich and we act this way, and then we are rich, and then this and this, and then we're better than, and then, and here comes the little kid kind of going, well, where do I fit in? You don't. You do as I say. So then that person is constantly conditioned to get approval from the mother or the father of like, well, my only worth comes from you, so I must follow you, deity. They deitize this energy. And so they crave love. Everybody does, but, you know, a borderline personality. And again, there's a little bit, there's a lot, there's different kinds, there's so many variations. But because they crave love, but they can't understand why they have this compulsive, impulsive need to, quote, fuck up, be it drink, screw around, do drugs, do whatever, or just be oppositional. And not bad. They're not bad. Not everybody's bad. Not everybody goes all the way out on a limb, but just enough. It is that where we cannot judge, we must observe, like Tourette's or anything else, or hiccups or seizures. It is an organic, real thing where you compulsively cannot handle, because something in the brain associates this worthlessness and this lack of love, and it's so painful and the roots are so deep that I have to kind of run and go over here and do very nefarious or risky, you know, jumping off of ceilings or cliffs or something. I have to go do a lot of drugs that if I die, I die. And you look at these people and you go, well, they're adventurous or whatever else. Or you go, oh, when I was younger, I did all these drugs. But it's an impulsivity, compulsivity. Now, what if you don't do that, but you go get married or you're with somebody, but then the time bomb goes off after the kids are grown or growing? And you go, everything's so good. It's so perfect. I can't. There comes a time where this trigger goes off in you and you're like, but, and I have to worry, and they obsess, and then they worry and they become neurotic because their hormones change or whatever. But you can see the root pattern comes from that parent, regardless of the age. And if that parent was neglectful or emotionally conditioned to say, I love you with this, or I don't. Oh, or you don't ever say, I love you. Ray Romano used to talk about that. Say, my dad came from an era where you just don't talk about your feelings. And then he did that wonderful show that was on for a while that I liked. I forgot the name of it. Something about men, and it was really about inner character and everything. And I thought, you know, and we all said, oh, well, you know, in the 50s and in the 40s and in the, you know, World War II, and then, you know, because they went to Korea. And I look at all this and I think, no, my father was abandoned. He had a lot of borderline traits, and he channeled his violence at a young age into being a soldier, a very productive way of making that anger into a very good Marine. But then coming out of that as a young man, it didn't equate for a long time until he finally went to AA in his 60s. But back to what I'm talking about with in-laws and Megan and Harry. So now I see that this monarchy, this queen, this red aura queen, just like you think of the, what is it, the, not Cinderella, what is it, Alice in Wonderland, the Red Queen, off with their head, off with their head. Now, she's not exactly like that. She's not over the top. She's very quiet. But red aura people are traditional, pragmatic, and probably not listening to this podcast. They are black as black, white as white, Republican, Democrat, up, down, wet, dry, what? You know, it's like there's only a few words, and life's not complicated. It just is what it is, and you do what you do, and you stiff upper lip, and yep, and nope, and yep, and nope, and boom. Now, I know a lot of red aura people that are phenomenal leaders. Michelle Obama, intelligent, articulate, and soulful. But you notice if something isn't justice or honorable, she has no time to mediate or understand or hear an excuse. It's like, I'm a woman, I'm older, I've done this, I don't have any, So she's very clear. And there's a lot of different examples of people that are. But anyway, this Queen of England has been, when you look at these films and Prince Charles is this little boy and you know he's neglected and he's looked upon and they have more money than God and he's got everything. But he was trained, or he's like, you know, you're part of the monarchy. You act a certain way. I mean, talk about a role of pressure that you must fulfill. And then he's a certain age and it's like, well, you can have your girlfriend, but go find somebody to marry and have kids. And, you know, we've got to keep this image up. So even though they are the queen, you know, and we're talking the monarchy and a real thing, this really represents a lot of families. You know, you have to keep the image up, because I come from a time where, you know, we got to think what the neighbors think, because we have to compete, because that's what gives us worth. And we have to do this and we have to do that. And we have to. And it's like, okay. And so they grow up and children need to express themselves. You do this, or if you're not going to do that, you're not included. Time out, go in the corner. Now they know those kind of, quote, punishments are not curbing bad behavior. The bad behavior, not all the time, but I'm saying generally speaking. But that generally speaking, you are perpetuating, exacerbating, and making it worse by frustrating the child that you're not worth a goddamn thing because you're a child and you can't get mad and you can't get rebellious and you're not performing and conforming and behaving. And the way that the rule works is when you are good and you fold your thumbs, I'll look at you, but I'm never going to say I love you, but I don't need to raise my voice, but my message is this. Now that kid, I know that kid, and I've seen him manifest in so many people and clients or sons of clients. Very charming, very lovely, very confused. Borderline, I don't know who I am. I don't know why I go out and do. I don't know. I thought my parents loved me. I've heard things and the blue aura, enabling, codependent, nurturing every part of my 6'1" body urge to nurture and rescue and heal and connect with their angels. Part of me hears this. I die, because I look at them and they go, well, I thought my parents loved me, but the way that they talk to me, I guess they don't. Or, yeah, I think I need help with my alcohol drinking or drug abuse. Can you help me? Or can you pray with me? Can you talk with me? And I'm like, why can't they see what they have? They have this beautiful child. And if you just had a parent that would do this, and parents, why don't you come forward? And why don't you just take your beautiful child with this beautiful aura and this beautiful, oh, everything I see is so great. And why? But I had to learn, I can't go in and fix this. But that's a different story, but I can see it. And also my urge, not just because it's a client or a friend, but it could be family or it's a real crisis. And I give the advice and I see everything, but I also have people very, very, very close to me that fit this profile. So I can't just turn them off at 5 o'clock or do a few reading sessions and then go, well, I'm home. It affects me deeply. So I really understand the core of this worth. And if you are raised, you don't have a foundation of worth. you're going to have to learn. How the hell are you going to learn? Where's all the money come from to go to the psychiatrist and psychologist? And where's the tools and everything else? But that is a subtle, subtle childhood neglect, manipulation, put down. I control you. But people like my own husband, he doesn't feel controlled. He doesn't know any, but he see it takes decades to understand. Maybe what they want isn't what you want. Gee, I didn't meet you till you were already divorced, and then you were finally doing, you were well into your 30s doing an occupation you wanted to do. Why didn't you do it when you were 18, 19, 20? Oh, because I had to go with the family and do the da da da. And I go, well, why did you do that? Because that's what I was told. Because that's being good, not just obedient. That's what's best. Well, why didn't you know what was best? It wasn't what's in your heart. Well, I didn't know. So there's no put down, and they didn't know. And all truth, I'm not upset or angry over any of that, because that's how all parents and grandparents and different, you know, everybody tries to take care of their kids or their son-in-law or daughter-in-law, or if you have businesses or family businesses, or you help with homes, or, you know, so I get it. That's not really the issue. But the issue is one day when you understand the words that they're using and the intentions that they have, it may be time to re-examine. And that's what Harry and Meghan did. He has his mother right behind him. Now, he has courageously and beautifully admitted he has many issues. He never acknowledged his mother's death. Of course not. It's British. It's red aura. It's stiff upper, you know, what is it? Keep calm and carry on. She died. She was murdered. She got killed. She was hit. She wasn't just Princess Di got a divorce and, you know, went around and had money. I mean, she was saving the world her way. She did everything that pissed them all off, and she did it anyway. Everybody on every continent revered this lovely woman. And now she's gone. And here's this little boy at this funeral procession where everybody in the whole country is laying flowers down, and she's gone. And now it's like, okay, you go to boarding school and you grow up and you do your duties and you go into the military and you become part of this family and you blah, 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 blah. And then he is independent. A little more than... And not saying that William, because I often thought, gee, my own son looks like Prince William, you know, very tall and sad. But it fits. His personality, his aura is very violet. He's very much more emotionally can detach and look at the big picture. And he is comfortable in his role. But Harry has an orange aura, a physical orange aura, which is adventure, which is look over there, there's the sunset, which is, hi, I have an orange aura and I'm here to be on the earth to tell you there is no death and life goes on and nothing can hurt you and there's nothing to fear. So there's only adventure, and why not? So he is. He's adventurous. He's got to touch it, not just look at it. He's got to experience it. And now he falls in love and marries a woman with a red aura. So they both have physical colors. And the red aura, like I said, similar to the mom, what is it? We don't like what we see in other people, is strong, independent, sees things according to her, black, white, red, blue, up, down, wet, dry, very pragmatic. Well, she's a few generations and a few continents away and a few cultures and not from England and all this other thing, and comes from LA. And the mama teach yoga And the dad is one of those, you know, like uncles that show up at Thanksgiving where everybody rolls their eyes, or my grandmother with her five bags of colorful pills and handguns. So everybody's got one. But all of a sudden, from Megan's point of view, her pragmatic and her courage goes, well, this is charity. You do charity, but this isn't a charity. This is a brainwash. And this is a way to empower women. And this is how I see it. And I'm a woman. And this is the way to do it. And that's not an effective way. And this is not called diplomacy and royal treatment when you have the rag magazines make fun of her being of African American, whatever, black heritage, and they have pictures of monarchy and some royal family from decades ago, a black and white photo of them holding a chimpanzee. How heinous, how abhorrent to infer their baby is a monkey. I mean, holy shit, I thought TMZ and these things and shows and photos and paparazzi were, this is ruthless, and you want me to suck it up and stay in this environment for the greater good of England and the mother queen? Uh-uh. And he's going, I'm not afraid. The life adventure is in front of us. Look who you are. Look who I am. And he's going, and he feels that inner trigger of a childhood, of that borderline, of that mental breakdown, of that unknowing anxiety that something could be taken from you, that you are conceding and settling far beyond what he saw his mother did her whole life until she got older. He smells it. And he says, no, we're free. Let's go. And she says, yep. And so the two of them, they have this phenomenal new opportunity in front of them to go create the life that they want. And so really by it happening, and I can just feel that this is Princess Di going, yes, I was supposed to be who I am and leave this planet so I could help everyone in a bigger way, even more so, which is another podcast about why people leave, and a lot of them too soon, believe me, actors, Michael Jackson, people, regardless of what their mistakes were in their life, there are a lot of very famous people that have chosen to leave early this planet because they have their, what they are doing in spirit state is 10 million times greater than what they achieved here. And so it's sad for us, but boy, they're still at it. But back to this. So now Princess Di is guiding her son and her daughter-in-law and her grandson to be independent and have integrity. But it isn't against, like the queen thinks, well, it's against me, it's against the monarchy, it's against the protocol, it's against the frickin' Norman Rockwell frickin' Saturday Evening Post magazine where we're supposed to get haircuts in a barbershop and everybody's white with button-down shirts and a lollipop. Nope. It's not against that. It's for themselves. So how can you apply this to your own family? I have a few little notes here. When your family, and again, I think it's hard now with people that support Trump in America here and those who don't. And that's another podcast, and I will cover that because it's frightening that we are really being dictated to, not about politics, but about denial and avoidability and the energy that is blankets our country, that vulgar energy that makes it okay to belittle people and make them non-human and to intimidate is dictatorship. regardless of who you voted for. I'm talking about the energy. So that's for another day. But applying that to your own family or your in-laws or family that you love. Codependent No More by Marion Beatty, the classic little thin paperback, has charts in it all about different qualities and things that and urges that you have or that you've seen in other people. But if you have these urges or these thoughts, it may be time to lovingly detach from your family so you're not constantly getting these urges and your thoughts. Because she's teaching you, you're not going to fix them. But you can fix yourself by detaching and removing yourself from their firing line. So when it's time to detach from family, and again, detach, redefine that relationship. My husband used to say, well, I'm detached. I live out on the West Coast. I've always wanted to come to California. And only recently we moved back east. But detaching isn't just physically removing yourself. You have to redefine your relationship. So in detaching, you can love someone, but not their choices. So I love many family and friends, but not their choices. And then sometimes I think, well, maybe I have to redefine that. I loved, past tense, these people and enjoyed these people. But now the scale is tipped a little bit, or I don't have the hormonal coupons to tolerate their choices anymore. But either way, I can pick out the parts. I can love parts of them, and the rest I can detach or start to intend to. And sometimes you want to when, if you notice your family or other family, they're never impressed. No matter what you say, I got this job or I got this opportunity. Well, weren't you going to get it anyway? Well, you know, your brother got this. So whatever it is, it kind of snubs you in your tracks. And sometimes it takes the outsider, the in-law, the son-in-law or the daughter-in-law, to look at the spouse and say, you're so fucking used to hearing that your whole life. Don't you see you were just put down? No, I wasn't put down. They are just blah, blah, blah. And then we negotiate and we rationalize our parents' behavior because that's innate. We want to rationalize a love because we know they love us and that's their way that they love us. And the way that they love us, we end up doing the same fucking pattern because we think if that's love and I do it, then it has to make sense. That's how they love me. And that's part of inner work to look at how you're loved and to see, do you really want to be loved that way or are you just rationalizing? And when you do, you don't judge it, you just observe it. But anyway, let's go back to these steps. They're never impressed or they try to one-up you. My husband would always talk about it. He had an uncle and he'd always go like, you know, the dad would say something like, my husband's dad, oh, we got the new TV, and the uncle would go, that's not a good one. It's like somebody always has something better or they know more. Or another one is they twist your advice as insults. Like I remember once saying to a family person, oh, we can go get your hair done, you know, or let me take you out like a spa day. What? I'm not pretty? I don't want to go get it done. Why are you telling me that? That's hurting my feelings. And I sat there and thought, oh, I'm sorry. Jesus Christ, was I played. Here's another one. They give you unwanted advice. Well, you know, I'm just saying, you know, in my opinion, when my daughter did this and this, it would be a good idea if you did that and that for yours. And you sit there because it's a nice place to eat and it's a holiday and the wine costs a lot. And then I sit here and go, what the fuck am I sitting here for? Okay, here's mine. A step. After seeing them, be it your family, extended family, in-law family, friends, even your good friends, after seeing them, you go home and you talk to yourself. You don't really talk to yourself. Kind of get in the car and you go, oh, yeah, so-and-so said this, or oh, so-and-so said that. And really what it is you feel like shit. Or you go, well, it was good. I mean, I like the dog and, yeah, what they did with the kitchen. And this happens with young couples, too, a lot. When you're young, you go over and you one-up each other and you don't realize you really walk out feeling bad and broke and they make more and whatever. And well, he's a doctor. Well, I'm only a dentist or, you know. And again, there are steps and different things I'd love to share with you about competition and what it looks like and just to recognize them so you can breathe into them. But back to family. So they're never impressed. They one-up you. They twist your advice as insults. They give you unwanted advice. And the biggest one, after seeing them, you feel like dog shit. You feel sad, defeated, and inadequate. Because you're talking to yourself, or like me, you're up at 3 a.m. thinking about what they said, but most importantly, why you let them say it, and if you could tell them off what you would say. Anyway, you can see the judgment in its entirety. So if somebody is judging you, judgment isn't like, well, you're ugly or you're fat or you're this or that. They can act very polite and everything, but judgment in its entirety, it's not about judging your choices. See, like, well, my mom didn't say this to me. She said this to me. And I'm like, no. Or my one relative says, like, well, my husband said this and he didn't say this, and I have a friend that would say that, and that's really hurtful. And I said, no, they are not really judging your choices. Like, oh, you got a pepperoni pizza. I thought you liked chicken barbecue. They're not judging your choices. They're judging you. This sometimes takes a while for all of us to see, like, well, our parents, they wouldn't judge me. I was loved. My parents love me. Well, they might because of their own triggers. And even if they're loving, they may say, well, what'd you get that house for? What are you going to buy a house there? Because it triggers their own inadequacy and other things or their lack. But if you can see the difference between, are they judging your choices, which is really an opinion, or are they judging you? Well, would you buy that house for? That's not a very smart thing to do. That's not a very smart investment. So if it's more targeted towards you, that's an insult. And maybe start to take a personal inventory. And then you can ask yourself, why do I put up with them? And just realize that, you know, this mediating quality that you have isn't always, because you may say, well, I don't want conflict and it's only an hour and, you know, it's my family and they love me and I got to put up with it, or they help us out or they give us money or it's all rationalizing. It's good. We can't all have it perfect. We try. Again, you know, it's about percentages. But if you can really step back and say, but do they want conflict? And if they do, you're never going to win. You're only going to show up so they can make you feel bad, because it does make them feel good. I have written so many things in different workbooks and things that say, it's true, putting people down will make you feel good. Yelling at someone for voting for someone will make you feel righteous, and it's a really good feeling, and your energy actually goes, and your aura glows and everything else. But it doesn't stick. It falls. It's kind of like sugar. tastes good for a minute, but you need more. Because it's of a low vibration and it needs fueling. So you need it and you need it and you need it. So if I'm going to put you down, I need somebody to put down. So that's when you get older and you go, why am I always walking away talking to myself? Because I'm making myself available with a smile when I want to turn around and go, why don't you have another fucking case of donuts and go, you know. Oh, the things I could say. But instead, I realize in that moment, I become it. So I must be mindful to detach mentally, even before I see these people, or emotionally, or spiritually, or physically as often as possible. Why? Because their intention isn't to make me happy. They aren't asking questions to see about my wherewithal or my family's wherewithal. They are only using me as a manipulator would to make themselves feel better. So when you start seeing that, don't judge it. Don't go in there and say, and then you did another fucking thing. I mean, you could if you want to get in the mud. That's fun. I've done it. I picked up the phone and slammed it down and broke it. I've had some family issues where at the time, I think I had 42 years of rage and it came out. Felt good, but it didn't really, do anything. So this way, I'm trying to show and share with you from a metaphysical point of view, if you can just use words and let those words kind of resonate and say, that makes me anxious, then that's a good thing. You're hitting a nerve and say, I'm going to release this. I'm going to release the need to be a target. I'm going to release the need to be available. I'm going to release the need to mediate. I'm going to release the need to tolerate family bullshit. So you can use these kind of thoughts to initiate what you are commanding the universe and claiming that you're no longer available for. So remember, you are number one. And these people, they are manipulators because they want something from you, which is your naivete, your conceding, your going along. So you're really making them feel good by saying, well, I won't rock the boat. And I see a lot of that in myself because that's how I was raised. And I had a sibling and that's how I had to be. And I thought, well, I'm used to it. It's no sweat off my back. Doesn't mean anything. I know I'm great. I know I'm pretty. I know I'm smart. I know I'm this. But then you get older and go, yeah, but you're doing things that you don't need to do, Cindy. And I go, yeah, you're right, Cindy. Yeah, I don't need to do this. They are manipulators because you are their vehicle to get what they want. And they want attention. Or they want to be the victim. And they only care about themselves. They want to be the narcissist. Or use their narcissist defense, which is, well, you hurt me. Or what about me? Or because of me, you put me in this thing. And why? Because they're hurt. And we can all say why and send compassion. But let's do that another day. Let's focus on number one and say, I see these patterns. I'm not going to change them. I'm going to detach from these people. So when they scheme and they know what to say to deflect responsibility and accountability, well, I only told you this because it's good advice, or I didn't mean to say anything, or do what you want. Really what it is I want you to do this and I want you to feel bad if you don't. And then if you don't agree with me, I want you to feel bad because I want you to feel bad because I like you to come around so I can make you feel bad because it makes me feel good, because it makes me feel powerful because I don't have a frickin' brain in my head. But I brainwash you your whole life that this is love and that's caring. These people, they make up their own accountability and responsibility. Well, I had the best lawn. We put the Christmas lights up after Thanksgiving. I did this. I did this. I saved money. I budgeted this. I did that. I saved for that. I built the roof on the car or the house. I paid for the car. I did this. We make up all these rules. I jumped through that hoop. I did it. I did this. I did it. Setting intentions, having goals, all good things. But if it's to the point of rubbing someone else's nose in it to make it feel good that you did your own push-ups and Hail Marys and everything that you did well, but you never looked at someone's eyes and said, I'm sorry or forgive me, I was not kind or I was hurt, or if I've ever said anything to you, I'm sorry, but today's a new day. And the same, if you can't be real and be in the moment and go, okay, you know what, let's get rid of the last year. Let's get rid of it. And a lot of physical people can do this. The red auras and the orange auras and the yellow auras, they're ready to shake it off and be in the moment. But there's a lot of people that want to keep drumming up the past to make you feel bad. So you got to look at the intention. So if people are making up their own, well, I was accountable and I'm responsible in this way, or, you know, we sent you to college and we did this and you did that. So that kid grows up as a young adult and goes, well, I got all this stuff, but I don't feel loved. Fuck it. Let's just get high. So, and then they go, well, that was a drug addict kid. No, that was a person in pain that's confused and has no reason or understanding why they have such compulsive and impulsive anxiety issues. Harry knows how to express himself now. So if these people are doing this, it's up to you to notice it and identify it and not fix it. Because detaching is not the same as, well, if you're this way, I'm backing off or I'm not going to talk to you. And that's called withholding love as punishment. Well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you. And that's just the same, but with a different point of view. It's the same low vibration, shitty behavior. Detaching is not the same as withholding love as punishment, because that is really passive aggressive provocation. Detaching is you want anger and conflict and the cycle of blame and shame to stop by saying, so you can hear it, I am no longer available to be your target of blame or your target of misery. So I want to leave you with affirmations. You can affirm, I am always surrounded by loving, supportive, kind, fulfilled, articulate, loving people. And I deserve to be free from anyone who is not. It is safe to love. It is safe to be loved. It is not my responsibility to settle, get along, or tolerate disrespectful, hurtful people, including family members. I can always love and forgive someone, but not necessarily their choices. Their choices are theirs and not mine, and not what God made. I can forgive what God made, which is their light. Megan and Harry really have told everybody in the world, and they have made a proclamation of saying, I trust in the future, in the unknown, what's best for us, and their guidance is their own joy, not pain and condition. And their inner guidance comes from peace and not from being targeted and controlled. Megan and Harry are here to show us how to be open, how to be open to creativity and new opportunities and happiness as a result of that. And the one thing that they're going to do, not only be open, is their creativity, like going over to Stanford and talking about a charity. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, we want to do good in the world. No, we want to do women's magazines, or we want to help people with women. And it isn't, yeah, they have an outcome and they'll have people help them with the outcome and it will end up raising money and awareness. But the creative force of like, yeah, let's make a movie, let's make a documentary, let me help you market your product that you're making, or your lipsticks, or your recipes, or whatever, the clothes that you're making in whatever country you're from. I mean, it's so creative. And they are attracting other creative people who are totally unknown. And in fact, by them saying yes and I trust, they are opening up to such philanthropic endeavors. There we go. I so admire them. Yes, unfortunately, they had to be ridiculed. Yes, unfortunately, they had to be blamed and targeted like so many of us. But let's take their example and celebrate that they are living in faith. And as their lives unfold, and whatever they do, it will benefit others more organically, consistently, and originally. And that is phenomenal. And that is true, utter, unconditional self-worth and faith. And I say amen to that.
You have been listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast with intuitive expert Cindy Goldenberg. To learn more or stay connected, be sure to visit www.cindygoldenberg.com.